everyone. I hope you're as excited about the PSI Women's Conference taking place on June 29th and June 30th in New Jersey as we are. As part of the pre-conference initiative, we invite you today to the podcast series, PSICast. Today's topic is Grace Under Pressure. If you have a chance to look at the excerpts from Swami's discourses and the study circle materials on the PSI Women's Conference website, that's great. But if not, you can always find them there. With me tonight is my co-host, Nandini Kalyanasundaram.
Jai Ram, everyone. It's good to be here, and I'm thankful to Swami for this opportunity and to be co-hosting with you, Anna. So why don't we get started with three ohms first?
Sure. Dear Swami, we offer this podcast series at your Divine Lotus Feet. Please think through us, speak through us, and be with us together on this podcast. Thank you.
That was beautiful, Anna. Thank you for getting us started. What a blessing to be sharing this podcast with our Sai family on Ishwarama Day.
Yeah, certainly. So why don't we get right into it with some introductions?
Absolutely. So for everyone that doesn't know me, I'm Nandini Kalyanasundaram. I'm originally from Coimbatore in India. I came here to the U.S. for my master's program in Boston. That was my first introduction to the PSI Center, and that is where I met Anna too and have known her for a while now. I've been working within technology consulting for the past 8 years, and about 2 years ago, I moved to Dallas, but still an East Coaster at heart. Anna?
Thanks, Nandini. Fond Boston memories, and actually a shout-out to all of the Boston PSI Center members that are able to join us today. I'm Anna Gurevich, and I'm originally from the New Jersey, New York City area, but I've lived in Boston for a few years now, since also moving here for law school. I'm currently a corporate and healthcare attorney here in Boston. I grew up in a PSI family, and as an adult, I'm definitely feeling like my spiritual journey is meandering a bit more than I anticipated. So I really appreciate the opportunity to connect with you and people like our guest speaker today for some heart-to-heart conversations.
Well, that was a good segue. We are excited to introduce our guest for the day. Anna, don't you think she embodies the topic?
Oh, she does in every sense of the word.
So without much further ado, welcome to our first PSICast, Geeta.
Sairam, Anna and Nandini. Sairam, everyone.
Geeta, why don't we get started with a small introduction?
Sure thing. So I'm originally from Chicago, but I guess if I were to rewind back, I think my SSC journey started in Boston, and I would say majority of my young adult life has been in the Chicago area, so Region 5 represent. So presently I am working as an internist in the south side of Chicago for a community health center called Friend Health, where I also serve as the associate medical director. I'm an internist by profession, so I'm mostly involved in primary care, and I'm happy to be here, and I think I'm very thankful to you all and the organizers of the PSICast to be part of this, and honestly, this has been an amazing last week, which is when I found out about it. Talk about being grace under pressure. And really reflecting on my journey thus far with the divine within. So thank you all, and I look forward to our conversation.
Thank you so much, Geeta. This is a meeting of all the Boston folks. Sounds like a small Red Sox team we have going on here. How are we feeling about our first podcast, guys?
Well, like Geeta said, I'm definitely trying very hard to practice the topic right now, grace under pressure. So no pressure, guys. But I think all three of us were definitely struggling with actually practicing this over this last, you know, week or several few weeks as we prepared this, weren't we?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think right from the technology to the topic to the format of the meeting, And given that all three of us, which we shared with each other, that we were not avid podcast listeners, and also all of the events specifically that has happened over the past week has truly culminated into us being the chosen ones for some strange reason for this topic and for this podcast.
Agreed. You couldn't have said it any better.
So maybe a good question to start with is, what does grace under pressure mean to you? Geeta, and why don't we start with you?
This is such an interesting topic. I've never heard of it until literally last week when Nandini called me up and said, hey, you want to be on this podcast? And literally I had to take about 24 hours to think it over before I responded with a yes, not knowing what I was getting myself into. But I think as I have marinated over this topic now for the last week, I think different answers have come through, and definitely have like reached out to my friends and family over the last several days, asking them, kind of picking their brain on what this could even mean for different people. And I think that itself, the journey of understanding what grace under pressure means, has been very revealing to me. And I think about from my own experiences, what grace under pressure, the first person that comes to mind probably is my mother, because she embodies grace under pressure probably the most. And having obviously been under her loving arms for all these years, I see that because she carried our family through thick and thin. She was, you know, kind of there for me and my younger brother. And she was the caretaker for my younger brother, who suffered from Duchenne muscular dystrophy for nearly 21 years, and she did it. And Dad and I were there, and we watched her and supported her, obviously, but somehow something about this woman just stands out still, like how she was able to embody that principle in a way or a manner that I can't even imagine. And she did it with poise. At no point did I ever feel left out in the process, and she took care of it, made sure we had dinner on the table. Everything was taken care of, and I think, to me, first off, she embodies that. My brother, on the second hand, was the second person I would say who would I think of as grace under pressure, even though he went through many physical changes in his short span of 21 years. He showed through and through how to really embrace that which is given, taking something that seems out of the ordinary, seems so unfortunate, and turning it into an opportunity. And this was an example that, you know, a lot of people that I spoke to talked about. How do we take that pressure that we're given and turning it into an opportunity, which I thought was a very beautiful way of explaining grace under pressure. Another, thought that came, and I thought it was so beautifully said, was by one of my friends, is this: if you are truly under, if you're truly in grace, and recognizing that you are under the grace of God, and Swami has always said that He's in you, above you, around you, behind you, beside you, in you. And if we're truly in that grace and recognize that all the time, then really you shouldn't feel any pressure. The moment we disconnect from that Swami within is when we feel the pressure. So so it was a really nice way to look at that definition and parse it out in that way. And just being able to not react and or be reactive, and just remaining cool as cucumber. And I thought, like, all of those were such beautiful ways to explain grace under pressure. So those are some of the initial thoughts that came to my head. And maintaining equanimity through tough times, I think that's the crux of this whole conversation, which is how do we maintain that, and how do we keep it real? Because it's easy to say this retrospectively, but prospectively, how do we keep that in check?
That was beautiful, Geeta. And I particularly liked that everything that you shared had told so many facets to the topic at hand, because initially when I thought of it, it was just the external appearance of a person when they are under pressure. It's how they are able to keep their emotions under check. But what you shared is kind of even beyond that. So I found that very interesting. So I know when we were also talking about this topic, Geeta, you were sharing about a story when you were writing your dissertation. I thought that would be a fabulous snippet to share with our podcast listeners today.
Sure. I think poor Swami had to work overtime on my behalf many a time. And one such occasion was actually, I have a PhD in cardiovascular physiology, which is how I started my, right after undergraduate, I went into it through a series of circumstances which far beyond extends the topic of, at hand. But it so happened that I pulled an all-nighter for a presentation that I had to give, and I felt like I knew everything I needed to know, and I put all the efforts, the notes, everything. And I remember going the next morning with my slides, and I was completely tongue-tied, and I couldn't believe that because I felt like I knew exactly what I needed to say, but nothing would come out in a way that was, you know, making any sense. And I felt I completely botched it. And so I remember going back to my thesis advisor and saying to her, like, listen, I totally screwed that up. So if you think that that's not something, you know, because this is going to determine what my dissertation next steps would look like, feel free to, like, let me go as your grad student. Because at that point, I was so critical of myself that I thought that this was the end of the world. And so I remember my dissertation advisor looking at me in disbelief and said to me, do you think I'm going to let you go just based on this one thing? All this means is you're going to try a little bit harder next time, and that's all I need you to do. And so I walked out of the office feeling completely relieved and yet at the same time feeling so sad and that I did not live up to her expectations. And I, of course, and in that, a fear started to creep in where I began to think, oh, I'm not capable enough of expressing myself in a way that I can. But so I had all these doubts creeping in. And so a few months passed by, and I was approaching another round of presentations that I had to give. And in that time frame, you know, Swami was very, very present in my life, what I'd call like the honeymoon phase, where I would have dreams and Swami would talk to me and through signs, through, you know, I don't know, Paulo Coelho books or what have you. And so in that tryst, I think I remember going on the Eisenhower Expressway, and those of you who are listening in from Chicago know how crowded that roadway is. And I was taking a turn into the Maywood campus of Loyola, which is where I did my dissertation. And I remember being cut off by this huge semi-trailer, literally to the point where I had to, you know, put a brake on my car and, you know, narrowly escaped hitting it. And at that time frame, I was shocked at what this guy was doing. And I had to, like, look up, and what I saw amazed me, because on the side of the semi-trailer were the words inscribed, and I kid you not, it said, "Fear is useless, faith is priceless, Baba." And as I looked at it, and I couldn't believe what I was listening or saw, what I was reading. So the semi-trailer started to speed up, and I so, of course, followed it. And it went up the ramp, and then it disappeared. So it was a to-do-do-do-do moment, because I couldn't really believe that that just happened. And how could a semi-trailer disappear? Was I in a matrix of some sort? I'm not sure. But those words were inscribed in my heart forever and have become my mantra for any time I have to do something pressure-filled, like this podcast, for instance. So what I think that has brought to my attention every time I'm struggling with something where I'm under pressure is that all of these experiences are placed there to remove these layers of fear, guilt, you know, feelings of inadequacies that we place upon ourselves, and the faith that lives within to that God that's created us, the God that is present within us, and the God that's verily us is what we should be truly manifesting. And I think to that I say dare to be divine, which was a word that I heard during the World Youth Conference spoken by Uncle Jagadish, and speaks to me even to this day, and interestingly happens to be the theme of the Zonal Youth Conference as well. So I feel like every day we're given a chance to be, we have a choice of manifesting our divinity, and how we do it, how we take that fear part away, and how we manifest that faith in God, that divinity within us, I think that part is the priceless part of this journey.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Gita. It's a really beautiful story. So the words that were on the side of the truck were, fear is useless, faith is priceless, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And I think it also brings to mind another concept. I think, you know, how do we remain that way? Because it's nice to have these signs come by and go by, but how do we inculcate that into our day-to-day existence? Because even though it was, you know, there is still the doubt, the periods of doubt. Can I do this? Am I allowed, you know, am I qualified enough to do this? These are the questions we keep asking ourselves. And especially, I'm pretty sure many of the listeners could probably relate to this, where we think that we're not capable of doing something. But I feel like there's a thought that always, one of my patients always mentions, like, you're never given something that you cannot handle. And she would say it from a Christian parlance. And I thought that was a very fascinating way. We truly are capable of doing anything if we put our minds to it. And almost, when I say put our minds to it, it's almost we have to clear our mind and be in the mindful state to make that happen. And I think about, you know, people playing extreme sports. So why would someone, you know, I think Nandini yesterday you were mentioning about watching that one documentary about the solo climber, you know, what makes that person want to take on such an extreme sport and putting himself or herself in danger? Because at that moment, you know, you're just in that moment, in that Zen phase where nothing else exists. It's you and yourself and whatever the challenge. And I think in that moment, you're with yourself and you are face to face with that divinity that's within yourself. And I think that's the ultimate high. And I find that, like, in order to be in that Zen moment, you have to be mindful. And I think all these experiences that we have over a period of time allow us to experience those aha moments, right? And so those aha moments keep on expanding as we become more and more mindful. You know, what maybe when I look at my own progression, I think that's definitely happened. Earlier, I would find myself getting irritated if things didn't happen at the pace at which I wanted to happen, or if it didn't happen the way I wanted it to happen. And I felt like, you know, I really had to embrace Swami's uncertainty principle because it rides so high in my life. It's almost like I make a plan and he just jokes. He just laughs at me for making a plan because, you know, I have to embrace that uncertainty principle that he says, love my uncertainty. And so I do think in order, you almost have to, like, let go of all these things that, you know, the societal constructs of doing things at a particular time, you know, crossing off the checklist. And I think it's important to have those, I would say, but at the same token, when we sort of put ourselves and say that that's, if you don't do this, then you are a failure, I just think that we should, as, you know, we should move away from it. At least I feel like that's kind of what I have, you know, noted. And I don't know, maybe you guys want to chime in on your own experiences on this thought process.
Yeah, I definitely struggle with this a lot. I mean, you raised the idea of being confident that you can do anything or get through anything and not add that extra layer of either social, societal expectations or, you know, that your own internal expectations that maybe come from a place of fear that you are not the divine, that you're not going to be able to do something or get through something. It's definitely something that I think as, you know, as you go through different stages of life, I'm realizing is a huge struggle for me personally.
Yeah, I'm glad we're talking about this because we started off talking about what this topic means to us, but I'm glad that we are getting to a point where we are slowly peeling the layers of what we have at our hand, right? And talking about what is it that kind of doesn't keep us in check is a very good thing to think about. And I agree with both of you that the societal norms are definitely one of those. And sometimes I feel we are constantly working and we are in communication with people that probably are not approaching things the same way we do. And sometimes that also creates that added pressure to reach a certain destination. And we sometimes forget it's not about that. It's about the journey and what we all collaboratively learn from it. So I think it's most important to keep at it and keep through that journey when you're feeling that pressure, because when you come out of it is when retrospectively you see the gains or you see what you've learned from it, is something that I thought I wanted to share. You bring up a very good point, Anna. This is a great segue where, Geeta, I wanted to get your opinion on this specifically, wherein honing our imperfections, right? I guess, Anna, to your point, we feel like everybody else is perfect except us. So what are your thoughts on it and some of your experiences in terms of overcoming and getting confident with our own imperfections?
I think it's important to see ourselves as a whole. I think that's where I think how we perceive ourselves. And oftentimes what I find is that from when we were younger to like when we went off to college, I think we were educated in a particular way of thinking and, you know, groomed in a particular way of, you know, perceiving the world. And then you go out into college years and that's when you get to truly experiment and see yourself in a completely different manner. And then that's where you begin, because earlier, I would say the first 18 or so, 16 or 17 years of your life, you're pretty much a product of the environment that your parents have created for yourself or your that initial milieu. And then you move out to, you know, to the college environment or work environment. If you get to college, then you're in the phase where, you know, you're understanding who you are in the context of the larger macrocosm. And you find yourself, you know, questioning everything that you have learned about yourself. So then you begin this, you know, process of deconstructing yourself, and you're constantly, you know, questioning what I learned. Is this correct? Is this not correct? And I think this is where I felt my connection with Swami actually grew stronger, because I feel like he is one of the most coolest God forms that walked on earth, because he never said, follow me just because I'm telling you to, but come experience me and then believe me. So it was never a dictum, but it was more of, come, it's an experiential learning. And I think that in my life, when I look back at it, it's been that process. It's been like, you know, experimenting with trying or taking roads that are so unbeknownst to anyone else. And when I would look to see if there was anyone else who had traveled something like this, there were hardly anybody to sort of give you that. So that made you a trailblazer of sorts, because you had no other choice, because this was the only road down which you were led, and you had to do it to find out where that would lead to. And, you know, when you're going down a path that is less traveled by, it comes with its own set of, you know, issues and concerns, because you wonder, like, am I going right? Am I not going right? And at that point, you realize the only guiding light is that within. There are times where you stumble, fall flat on your face, you fail, and then you get up, and then you go again. And you get to a point where you can look back and say, oh, you know what? This road was awesome. I took it. I'm glad I took it, because even though there were two ways to get to the same point, I took this different route and I saw so many sceneries that I otherwise wouldn't have seen, but it ultimately got me to the same place. And I keep referring to this because these are two lines that I feel like pretty much defines my life for whatever reason. And it's not like, you know, I had so many choices, but it was just like the choice that was I was ultimately left with, and I had no choice but to walk it. But it has made such a tremendous difference. But now I find myself in a different way of looking at that same path, more prospectively, which is like earlier I would walk the path, then I look back and say, oh, yeah, that was not too bad. But while I was walking on the path, maybe I was whining about things, maybe I was complaining about things, etc. But then now I find myself looking prospectively and seeing, oh, here's a path that looks, again, very unfamiliar, but I think I am confident to move down this path. And where that progression happened from feeling not confident to now feeling confident, I think a lot of it has been that inner journey within. And it's very hard to explain it in words because only you understand how much you have progressed, because there are no spiritual yardsticks that you can use to explain that. But you know that you have, because you feel extremely grounded. You feel like, yes, you know, the God within is as strong as he or she can be to move me along. But still, it would be hard for me to, you know, say that I'm, you know, at that point where I don't feel the external pressures, or I'm not agitated by, you know, the pressures of the world, or, you know, being irritated, etc. And I'm reminded of one of my lead medical receptionists at our friend health center. She's a lady who is, you know, the epitome of positivity. She has had a very tough life. As I said, I work in the south side of Chicago, so most of my patients are African American. And this lady, every morning she comes around, greets all the people in all the portions of our clinic. It doesn't matter who it is that asks her that question. And we'll usually say, "Hey, Miss Laverne, how are you?" And she'll always say, "Hey, Dr. G, how are you doing? I have no complaints." And when she says it so emphatically without thinking it through. She doesn't even hiccup at no point. And I've tried this innumerable times, tried it different days of the week, different times of the day. It doesn't matter because it's the same answer. So it got me intrigued, and I literally had to ask her, "Why do you say that? Is it just truly out of, like, you know, is this now mechanical for you, or do you truly feel it?" What she was saying was that initially it started off as an affirmation that was just meant to change her mindset, because she's been through a lot. She was a recovering cocaine addict. She had a stroke, and then additionally she had quite a number of different, she was also shot in her face. So, I mean, from an external standpoint, she'd been there and done it and then some. But for her to be able to say the word, "I have no complaints," and owning it, and I think, you know, she to me embodies that principle of Swami that is, you know, so critical and so important for us. So how we tell the story to ourselves, how do we perceive our own journey and what we say to ourselves matters the most, you know. So I think we are co-creators along with Swami of our journey. So we've known the divine before we assume this body, and we'll continue to know the divine after we leave this body. But how do we remember the divine while we're in the body? I think that's the biggest conundrum. And clearly, you know, when we come in and we become part and embroiled in this world, we forget that divinity principle. But then when you start using things like positive affirmations and, you know, being in the company of good and divine thoughts, you recognize that you become more aware of all these little miracles that are happening, these little God wings, if you want to say so, that come through. But that really requires you to slow down and enjoy it, because it's, life happens in the small moments, not in these large moments, which are like, "Oh, I have a degree in this and I have a degree in that, and, you know, I make this much money," or whatever. At the end of the day, it's in the little moments. Am I able to truly be in that moment, truly appreciate it? Am I centered? And I think that's the only way, you know, you're able to truly embrace that spirit of Swami that I felt like, you know, when he went from the form to the formless. I think, you know, you'll get to experience him in ways, in so many more ways than we would have ever imagined. But I think, so those are some random streams of consciousness that came to my head. So I will let you guys talk now.
Yeah, you brought up a lot of different topics, I guess, that also came up in our sort of dissecting of this topic as a whole. I mean, you could do an individual workshop on five things that are related. Yeah, so I guess one of the things that you mentioned is how do we stay connected in the present moment? Do you have any things that you use specifically, like affirmations or or meditation or anything that, that you can suggest to us who, you know, who also struggle with this on a day-to-day basis?
I think this is a good place to bring up a disclaimer. Just because I'm here as a guest and speaking to you doesn't mean that I have it all sorted out. It just means that Swami specifically placed me in this podcast to remind me of all the things that I should be working on, haven't done so. So I would say I'm a work in progress and definitely under a lot of construction. And so with that said, I would say that what has worked, and I would only quote on things that I have done, and there are other peers of mine that are doing far more things, that more so than I could ever hope to do. But I do experiment with different things, you know. And for me, what I realize is that I have not, you know, there are people that meditate and are very disciplined and get up every morning and do the same routine. I'm not one of those people. I do definitely check in with Swami every morning when I wake up, and that's like right before I head off to work, the altar, even though I know that he's with me, but somehow like that's probably ingrained in me from, you know, when I was a kid and, you know, before you go off to school, you kind of hang out and talk to Swami and say your prayers. And so that definitely does happen. And so what I find is that my meditation is when I talk to Swami all the time. And this happens in car rides, you know, in Chicago, I spend umpteen number of hours on the car ride. And so sometimes these are organic conversations. These are thought processes that happen between me and Swami. So I realized, like, I've taken away that, you know, at the end of the day, the point is for you to connect with Swami one way or the other. So for me, I connect in the form of the check-in in the morning. More recently, I've started to do journaling, but again, I don't do like extensive journaling. I just do like quick points of three things that I'm grateful for, three things I wish the day would bring, which is kind of like where you're co-creating what the day looks like along with the divine. And again, this could be very simple, you know, at a very physical plane. It could be at a very metaphysical plane. It doesn't matter. So three things like that. And then an affirmation, like I am, and then whatever. So more recently, I would say in the last year and a half or so, I think I've been stuck on this I am principle because, you know, when you say the word I am, and whatever you put after it is how you are manifesting, you know, what is to happen. So I think I am big on that now. And I write, even though I may not necessarily 100% believe in what I'm writing all the time, but I think that process of writing allows me to remember, oh, yes, this is what I need to do. And then reflecting back on things that happened, three amazing things that happened throughout the day, and then what could I have done better? Because, you know, as I said, we have to own our imperfections too. I wish I didn't yell at the person, or I wish I was not impatient with this patient, you know, so things like that. So I do write that. And it allows me, and as I see my journal over the last several months, I can see the change, and I can see that inner shift within, because I find that I've become a little bit more calmer, a little bit more less anxious about things, and not having so many expectations of people that I maybe was told that I was having. And so those are some things that I do. And obviously, you know, service is a way that I truly feel like I see Swami every day when I come into work. You know, my patients are, you know, like people that just connect me to God, because they're just the most sweetest things that you could have. I mean, even the tough ones, the ones with a tough exterior, somehow, like, we connect and we, you know, just have the best of times. And honestly, it's a pleasure. It's they have been the, you know, kind of my, if I had to say, like, my workshop, you know, in workshop on myself, you know, because they've taught me how to be giving, how to be generous, how to be loving, how to be kind. These are patients, and these patients come from such broken homes and, you know, crazy lifestyles that I wouldn't have otherwise, you know, ever had the opportunity to mingle with. But out of their mouths come like the most profound statements in the form of a rap, in the form of a, you know, a hip hop song or a jazz song. So these are things that people actually share with me. And that level of rich work environment, I don't think I could get anywhere else other than this workplace. And it is the most challenging place to work in, but it truly enriches your life, has enriched my life anyway. So I'm very, very grateful for that. So for me, work is my meditation, if I may say so. And then I would say the young adult movement to be part and parcel of it. And I would say that journey has been immense. Whether it is like I have learned skill sets outside of the confines of what my medical profession or my research background or my public health background would have ever taught me, things like project management, you know, learning about how to run conference calls. I think we guys talked about etiquettes of conference calls and things like that. Like, I would have learned that in school or something, you know. So I think that part, and then Pudgeons, of course, were the primary way that I got involved initially. So that will always be a dear, sweet part of my connection with Swami. But yeah, these are some simple ways and where allows me to keep plugged in, and then in the company of young adults that are just also trying to seek the divine, I think there's a beauty in it, and to share that spiritual sojourn with so many people around the world, I think that's the ultimate high that you could get, and so for which I'm super thankful, because I'm reminded of this one quote that I heard during one of the Ladies' Day program in Puttaparthi. And that was my only Ladies' Day I ever was in the physical presence of Swami of. There was a lady who got up and literally, I don't know who she was, and if I were to go back, I wouldn't be able to figure out who she is. But she stood up, and she was wearing like this ochre robe, and she got up and she said, "Swami," and Swami was in the dais, and says, "Swami, I love you. I don't love you for who you are." So that was a very bold statement to say. "I do not love you for who you are, but I love you for what I have become in your presence." So it's such a profound statement and a bold statement, right? Imagine the living God in your presence and saying to him, "I do not love you for who you are," because that physical form, you know, did vanish. But what he left behind, you know, is that ability of ourselves to transform. So I think I fully understand when, you know, in the World Youth Conference, Swami said only youth could transform youth, and what that transformation meant, you know, those were all big words that meant nothing other than it sounded really cool. But now, like several years later, I can truly reflect back and say, yeah, you know, that transformation process has been integral, you know, in my day-to-day existence. And had it not been for Swami and having been labeled as the shyest girl, superlative, in my graduating class in high school, to be able to be in front of thousands of people and give talks, and now in this podcast to be able to talk to, like, I don't know how many other people are listening into this. I mean, if anything, if Swami can make a butterfly out of this little larva, then I'm pretty sure that, you know, anything is possible.
Thank you, Geeta, for all those inspiring messages. I just want to expand on this thought that you've shared with us, right? We retrospectively look and we see how much we've grown, and thank you for all the tools that you shared, from journaling through positive affirmation, and especially the story of your colleague. I literally was getting goosebumps. It was a wonderful, wonderful story. But when we are in the moment, when we are faced with that obstacle, how can we keep going?
I do. Thank you for reminding me, actually, because literally, I think as I've mentioned, this whole grace under pressure has been on the back of my head since last Friday. And so happened on Wednesday, as I had to give a not so pleasant news to one of my nurse practitioners who reports to me. And it was interesting because this nurse practitioner was underperforming, and she had like at least 4 or 5 complaints against her in a span of 4 weeks, and her charts were poorly done. And this is a common thing that we often see when we have so many patients all stockpiled into a short period of time, and somehow we're supposed to do quality charting, et cetera. But that's a whole different tirade that I want to get into. I struggled with the fact that in my head I'd already made up my mind that, oh, this is not acceptable. This is not acceptable for my patients. Like, I cannot afford to keep apologizing to these patients who have called in and complained about this provider. And I remember going and you know, my medical director was also supposed to come in on the meeting, but he couldn't make it. So as a result of that, I had to do this deed by myself. And so I remember walking into the conversation, and interestingly enough, that day on my journal, the thought for the day was, make sure the person that comes into your life goes feeling much more loved than when they came into your being. So that was like a Mother Teresa quote, which I'm probably paraphrasing. So that was my thought for the day on the back of my head. So I knew that there was something to be said about that during that encounter. So I walk in, and as I normally say before I go into a meeting, is like, Swami, please talk through me and, you know, deliver what you think needs to be delivered to this lady. But by God, this is really hard to do. So, you know, completely strained, I remember talking with her, and I was supposed to only meet her for a half an hour, and I was going to be very point blank, very direct about what she needed to work on, et cetera, because I knew that I was, if I allowed my soft self to come in, then I would not be able to tell her what she needed to do, and corrective action would not happen. But what flowed, and I can tell you this was not me talking, it was, you know, someone else had taken over the conversation, and what flowed was like this beautiful, like, you know, song between me and her. She said a few things, I said a few things. It turned into a 2.5-hour conversation, you know, about how she could improve herself. And she opened up about her insecurities of how she had lost her own son in the process. And I had to explain to her, like, imagine how you would feel if, you know, you as the patient, if you were abrupt, and if someone was abrupt to your child, and how you would feel. And so she began to understand, like, how she was reacting, and she understood, and she didn't feel threatened, because I think she walked in completely threatened by this encounter that she was to have. And then I remember her walking out saying, thank you for giving me the space to open up and share, you know, in all earnestness and honesty what happened and why I did. I do take ownership of that which I have done wrong, but I do promise to work better and rectify myself. So when I think of that, and I think of all the things that I was going to say and said, and I realized, like, there was a point, there's a choice that we make every minute of the day. Do I be kind or do I not be kind? And there are times where you just take the do not be kind process all the time. I do that. But if we decide to take that extra step and say, you know what, I'm going to take the kinder route, the higher road, even though someone else is not going to give that to me, I think that's where you have declared yourself a little bit more divine than you were the previous day. You've managed to be a better version of yourself than you were the other day. I think that's what that whole, you know, journey taught me. I'm reminded also of, you know, Sundar Iyer talking about, I'm sure a lot of the listeners have heard him say how, you know, why is it so hard, you know, when we are practicing Swami's messages or we're in the fivefold, you know, all these negativity, you know, surrounds us, and it's so hard to extricate yourself out of it. And you take one step forward and you get 10,000 steps backwards because, you know, you have not done that which you needed to do, et cetera. And I think Swami gives a beautiful example of, like, how when he was cleaning the utensil that contained a little bit of food particle, and he opened the faucet, then water fell into that utensil. Initially, what came out was all the dirt from the bottom, the sediments, et cetera, and then it turned into pure water. So Swami always says that his grace into our lives is like that. It is to, like, it's placed specifically to, like, extricate all this dirt that's out of you. So it's okay, you know. It's okay for us to embrace our imperfections. It's okay for us to say that, you know what, I'm not exactly where I need to be, but I know tomorrow I'm going to try again. I'm going to be a better version of myself than other. If I'm given a choice between two roads, and even though I want to do that because I want to, you know, this person did this to me, I can't believe this person was mean to me, but I have the option of taking that higher road and saying, you know what, I'm going to kill him with my kindness. I think this is something that Michael McCarthy used to say all the time, killing someone with the kindness. And I think that really does work. You know, and I just am saying what I have experienced, because even in high school, I've been bullied. And I remember this girl who was in my homeroom would constantly bully me for my name, bully me for how I looked, etc. So imagine as a teenager and you know, they'll say, oh, you have weird accent, we don't understand you. And so with all of that, I remember, you know, I remember going back and like practicing like what I had learned in SSC or something. And I would say like, no, I'll be kind to her. I'm not going to interact with her. And I kid you not, I didn't do anything but smile at her and say Sairam every time I saw her in my head, but not to her face. But by the last day when we were, you know, exchange, when we were graduating, she came up to me and gave her phone number and said, hey, you know what, keep in touch. Good luck with everything. I was shocked because I thought she was coming over to tell me something, you know, that was, again, going to be mean and how would I react to it. But literally she came, hey, congratulations on your graduation. Good luck with everything. And to me, I realized, like, sometimes you may not have the ability to be kind to someone in a manner that I can be kind to you guys, but you can still be kind to them in your heart. And, you know, that power, the energy that we emanate of positivity towards that person, it does reach that person and it does transform them. So I think it's just a process of us trying. We have to try every day and then keep trying more, I guess. So,
Nandini, I think you had a similar experience with this idea of sending energy to those around you to try to change the situation and change the dynamic between two people. Do you know the story that I'm talking about?
To be honest, as soon as the concept of killing with kindness and self-love that Geeta was talking about, it just told me why I was chosen to be here for this SciCast, because earlier this week, I think, Anna, you were actually referring to this story. Earlier this week, I did have a very tough time at work, and my colleague was telling me that your body language actually shows that you're probably displeased or not happy with the way things are going. And I feel like this SciCast is now showing me how I could have been better in that situation. And I absolutely loved the concept of being kind to oneself and continuously being kind to others, even during that difficult time, as one of the ways to overcome that obstacle, Geeta. So hearing that was really, really helpful and beneficial and very eye-opening for me. And I know as we were preparing for this, Geeta had also referred to a podcast by Jay Shetty and this artist called Humble the Poet, and your story actually reminded with what he had also shared in that podcast about him being bullied and how that very same person, when he met him years after, didn't even realize that he was that person that bullied him, and he was so kind and so loving. So he was saying, you know, you can't really hate on people because they are going through their own journeys and they are being, like how Swami says, they're playing a part which they had to probably play at that point in time, but they grow out of it and they mature and they change. So we cannot really hold on to that one version of the person. So having that self-love and being kind is, again, important.
Well said.
Yeah, that brings up the other idea that whatever challenges we face, whatever obstacles they're given for us specifically. You know, it's not really about that other person. It's not about what they are doing to us or what, you know, the particular challenges. It's something that Swami is putting there so that we figure out how to make ourselves better, to highlight the things that we need to be working on.
Actually, what we just talked about reminds me of one of my recent trips to the canyon. And in fact, that's one of the pictures you would see on the flyer. It's called the Horseshoe Bend. And the Colorado River, actually, which has been flowing from ages and ages and ages together, has actually cut through the rocks and has made this beautiful canyon wherein people now come pretty often to come to see it. And I feel everything that we've talked about so far, even our lives and our experiences and everything we face, is just a process of making that even more richer and even more spiritual.
And it's true, because like it's nature is reaction, reflection, rebound. So what we're experiencing in our inner journey is what, you know, we see in the outer journey. And there's so many examples from Mother Nature that we can, you know, look back and reflect back in our own journey. So I think that's such a beautiful example that you've given, Nandini?
Yeah, definitely. In my own experience, you see these challenges come, or even these moments where you're not sure what step to take in what direction. And it's really just this idea that every moment is an opportunity for us to grow and to learn something new about ourselves and what we can do and what we can handle and the strength, inner strength that we have, and having confidence in that.
I would say very well put as well, because I think the first step starts with you saying yes. You saying yes to yourself, and you saying yes to that inner divine within yourself. So that, you know, we've heard that quote of Swami, which says, you take one step towards me and he takes 10,000 steps towards you. And it's true. And I'm sure every one of those that are listening out there would agree that his divine hand is guiding us every single step of the way, whether we want to accept it or not, or whether we want to receive it or not, or whether we want to acknowledge it or not. So I think it behooves us to think about it from that angle, become aware of it, become aware of the miracles that happen around us, and, you know, acknowledge it. And I think it makes our life a lot more richer. So I'm also reminded of the poem, When You Said Yes to Me. And I think that poem is such a beautiful poem, because it pretty much, you know, is a brief synopsis of each one of our lives when we said yes to him. And even though it makes him sound like an external person, that God that existed in that physical form that we all love and adore, Satya Sai Baba, but that form is no different than our own form, and that divinity principle lives within. And I would say that when you said yes to me, you gave up the right to be like everybody else. So we almost had to, like, walk away from that which did not define us. We had to shed that which did not make sense. And that happened only through all these trials and tribulations that we were put through. And it's still we're getting put through, and we're, like, you know, pushed through the washer and the dryer every single day. And we come out standing only because, you know, he's there backing us up throughout the whole play. And I think one of the speakers that I listened to when I was starting medical school was a physician who had said that at any given moment, you know, Swami as the divine surgeon should be able to, like, take you, the divine scalpel, to use you in his mission. And I think that time is now. Each one of us is ready. Each one is, like, living that, as because he lives through us, and our lives are his message, and our lives are our message, because there is really no difference between him and us. And I think all these doubts and, you know, insecurities that we have about ourselves are all, you know, dissolved once we begin to acknowledge that really there's no difference between him and you. And I'm just reminded of a story that one of my young adult friends from D.C. had shared literally about several years ago. And this was when I was starting to do a lot of work in the Psy organization. And it was a story of an interview that he had heard from secondhand. So pardon if it's being misquoted to some extent or paraphrased. The story goes something like this, where a group of individuals were sitting inside the interview room, and Swami asked all the people assembled there if they would be willing to accept what he was going to give them. And he asked everyone to raise their hands if they were willing to do so. When he said that, everyone raised their hands without a hitch. You know, no one had any issues or concerns about it. They raised their hand, and then Swami changed his tone, as only Swami can do, and he said, great, I want to give you guys Sai Gita. I want to gift you Sai Gita. Immediately, in that small inner room, people started to quiver a little, because I'm sure the doubt of, like, how am I going to take care of an elephant, and et cetera, started to creep in. So the hands started to, like, come down, or some people put their hands down completely, some had it half. But there was one person that kept his hand up all the time in complete confidence. And so Swami was extremely pleased with this person and asked them to come forward. And in his inimitable style, he waved his hand, and out came a pendant of Sai Gita, which he gifted to this person. And he went on to say, listen, You guys were ready to accept anything that I was to give you. And the moment I said Sai Gita, you allowed all the doubts and insecurities to creep in and think that how is the Swami going to give me Sai Gita when my house is so small, I can't handle it, I have, you know, kids at home, et cetera, et cetera. And your laundry list went on and on. But this person, in all his steadfastness to me, said, well, if Swami is going to give me Sai Gita, he better figure out a way how I'm going to handle Sai Gita too. And so, and this is the epitome of, you know, utmost steadfastness. So Swami will never give you that which you cannot handle. So if he's going to give you these problems, he better give you the solutions as well. The truth is, like how the Kung Fu Panda movie goes, you have to go within to find that divine scroll and figure out what the answer is. And only you can do that. You have to travel to figure that out. And the answer is nothing but a reflection of you, the divine self. And so this is such a beautiful story. And every time I think of when someone asks me, can you do this? And when it's beyond your comfort zone, the first thing I say is yes. And then I think about it 10,000 times. And then I hope, Swami, please, hopefully you can get me through this, just like this podcast. So I am truly humbled, truly thankful to both of you guys for taking me through this ride of a lifetime. I can now say, been there, done that, done a podcast. I am.
What an awesome conversation we've had tonight. Thank you so much, Geeta. So much of what you said, everything that we've talked about tonight really struck a chord with me. I think that this is a really, really good and really deep topic. And I know that I've really benefited. As you said, I mean, this idea of being presented a challenge and trusting that Swami will get us through it. And, you know, we've now done our first podcast.
Yeah, I know, Geeta, we met, I think, about 8 years ago. It was at an event in Parthi. But I am so grateful as well for this SciCast, because the whole week that we've been talking and preparing kind of allowed me to know you at a much deeper level. So thank you so much.
And the friendship continues, dot, dot, dot.
For sure.
So for those of you listening in right now, please tune into the next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, May 21st at the same time. Also, please check the website for the Sai Women's Conference, which is www.satyasai.us/SWC2019. So if you go to that website, you'll be able to see information about the conference and, most importantly, a link to register to attend. Again, the website is www.satyasai.us/SWC2019. And we look forward to seeing many of you there.
Also, we've been seeing some really lovely Facebook and Instagram posts that have been put out by the social media team to get people excited for the conference. On both Insta and Facebook, you can search and follow Sai Women's Conference 2019 to see these posts.
So we'll sign off for now, and good night. And a heartfelt Sairam to you both, as well as to everyone who has tuned in tonight. Thanks so much for joining us, and much love to you all.
Sairam. Thank you.
Sairam.
Sairam.